information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
And everything I need to know, I heard it on my radio. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 238 from Media Monarchy. It's November 4th, 2011. And my name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, Radio Gaga, Harmonious Ghost, and Emergency Alerts. Secret Meets, General Strikes in the News Purge Test, plus Candy Wars, Rib Witch and the Car Connection on Food World Order, Asteroids, Auroras, and Active Over the Air on Cyberspace War, plus Pilgrims, Prophets, and Ritual Whiplash, all that and so very much more. November 4th, 2011, episode 238 from MediaMonarchy.com.
We might miss you when we grow tired.
Radio, Someone Still Loves You. Originally from their 1984 album, The Works, but right there from 1986, Live Magic. It's the one and only Queen, Radio Gaga. Watching those live clips blow my mind. The amazing mass amounts of crowds. Mass hysteria, in a way. And it's all connected, my friends. Welcome, once again, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 238 for Media Monarchy. It's November 4th, 2011, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, and sometimes DJ from MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning Pacific time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. If you were here last week, you know that this is now 5 years and a week going strong. Huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net for simulcasting this show live, as you hear it, my friends. And a thanks to our latest affiliate, KDXRadio.com, rebroadcasting Media Monarchy, and a thanks to all those other alternative media outlets that do likewise. All our archives are available on RadioForAll.net. That is the audio-only feed and the everything feed. Thanks to archive.org, we'll get you the audio, the video, the PDFs, and more. We're on FaceSpace, Twitter, Tube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, and so much more. If there's a new network portal, we'll at least set up an account with Media Monarchy as the username or keyword just to grab up that real estate. Because you never know what may become the latest, hottest thing. And whatever the most crowded digital town square is, that's where we're going to go to take open source intelligence and alternative news and information and bring it to you. A big thanks to the folks who donated, I think as an anniversary present, to Media Monarchy in the past week, like Satch in California, Sam in Belgium, Brian in St. Charles, Missouri, and Agnes in London. A huge thanks to all you folks. And some of you, even, you can send cash or a check. We have a P.O. Box set up. And all this information is on the top right of the page, but I'll tell you, it's P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon, 97212. I'll tell you right now, and we'll remind you again at the end of the show, we're going to be off next week. And not only are we going to be off from New World next week and from the live show here, we're pretty much going to be off the grid. So even our awesome Twitter account at Media Monarchy will be very quiet. But my man Alan in Omaha will keep Cyberspace War and Holy Hexes going, and maybe even more, my friends. We always leave the Google News page open when we do these live shows, because you never know what the hell's going to happen. Kane ties Romney in poll following sexual harassment reports. Israel intercepts two boats bound for Gaza. China urges Iran flexibility but opposes force. And we've got credit unions and the death of Michael Jackson and Groupon and Dooku and Kohlberg, Kravis, Roberts, and so many other things bubbling around in the trending world of digital news. The numbers are fascinating, and I personally don't put a whole hell of a lot of stock into it, even though we discuss it a lot, because obviously someone does. The powers that be do. And we can laugh at, you know, Reagan and Blair doing their kind of little funny astrological, wacky religious things, but it goes much, much, much deeper than that. But the nines are flying at us from all over the place. The latest this morning, Herman Cain's accuser and their attorney note that a settlement was dated 999, as in September 99. 999 is also the name of his tax plan that he perhaps stole from SimCity 4. And we've got the 99 weakers and the 99 percenters and YU55 and 33s and 11-9 11s and so many other numbers swirling around that, again, just take note. I can't fully explain it. All that we note on here is that sometimes it's sinister forces. We're going to begin with a brief note and a brief reminder for you, my friends. In the wee moments of Halloween morning, October 31st, I published Mixtape 13, That Most Harmonious Ghost. And again, if you subscribe to the feeds, feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. And again, that's right on the front page on the top right with that little orange feed icon. You know the one. The latest mixtape, massive, two-hour, multi-tracked, remixed, manipulated. I really dig it. I hope you guys do as well. And I will keep making mixtapes because, as you may know, I come from a college radio background. And as the times have gone by and we've been doing this show for 5 years, I've definitely felt a swing back towards focusing a little more on the media, putting more media in the monarchy, as we started to say. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to stop discussing all the other world events, such as we do on The New World Next Week, my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, episode 90, published yesterday, November 3rd. EAS test UNESCO drug wars. And we'll blast through the headlines, some of which we will go into much greater detail in this episode 238 as we go through our favorite alternative media friends. Story number one, and of course, this will be our lead single story. Nationwide presidential emergency alerts to be tested on 11-9. Story number two, U.S. halts payments to UNESCO over the Palestine vote. And the update to that is settlement building to ramp up as punishment for the UNESCO vote by Israel. And as we see again on the breaking news as we speak, 17 minutes ago from the New York Times, Israel intercepts two boats bound for Gaza. And a good background on UNESCO and the eugenics-obsessed elite and transhumanism. And our third story, WikiLeaks Honduras reports U.S. linked to brutal businessman. U.S. supported Honduras' ascent in the cocaine business. And back in the North American Union, documents show reaction to ATF's Wide Receiver and Fast and Furious, both those intentional gun-running operations to arm the cartels, because the way the multi-generational serial killers work is they play both ends against the middle. This is just more documentation of. And that's coming from the New York Times. So, episode 90 from NewWorldNextWeek.com. And again, we will be also off next week from New World Next Week, but we will come back in November with episode 91. That always leads us to the latest, greatest media from CorbettReport.com, episode 206, The Gutenberg Revolutions. The Gutenberg Press was the catalyst for the Renaissance and the Reformation, but it shaped what we communicated as much as how we communicated. What, then, to make of the electronic global village of our modern Gutenberg Revolution? Are we on the cusp of a new renaissance, or will this technology only further degrade a culture already in decline? The promise of the Internet, Library of Alexandria, or Library of Babel? The latest audio and video from CorbettReport.com, and again, James has the little orange feed icon that I just referenced on the top right of the page. It's the everything feed. Put that into your pod catcher of choice and you will get all the audio and video coming at an amazing rate. The latest videos, Nuclear Ambiguity, Israel's Secret Arsenal. That is part of the Eye Opener series. Three videos from FukushimaUpdate.com. Going over the last final days of October, and we will get Fukushima updates in just a few moments. The assassination of Gaddafi, that's a Global Research TV backgrounder and breaking, and this will be in our updates of Fukushima in just a few moments. New hole in reactor number 2. And lastly, James on Russia Today discussing human rights groups, quote-unquote, and the pretext for war in Syria. All that plus latest interviews with Bob Chapman, Michael Hudson, and Catherine Gallagher. All that and so very much more from CorbettReport.com. And we move to our friends at TragedyAndHope.com for episode 43 of Peace Revolution, the number one higher education show on Podomatic. And episode 43 is part 3 of The Ultimate History Lesson. Coming soon from TragedyAndHope.com, the massive multimedia set, The Ultimate History Lesson, A Weekend with John Taylor Gatto. All the information is there on how to donate, and we will help bring you this Ultimate History Lesson in part right now and in full the moment it's available, my friends. And a huge tip of the hat to all the hardworking folks in the Tragedy and Hope community. This brings us to our man Clyde Lewis from right here in Portland, Oregon, live on KXL, weeknights, 9 to midnight, and we give you the listen links and the subscription links and the Twitter links and even new live video links for Ground Zero Radio on Livestream.com, Livestream.com/GZ Radio, a competitor or alternative, if you will, to Ustream. Demons of the lesser god, say goodnight, Gacy. Speak no evil of the dead, beating the dead horse, and is it only a test? We publish all the articles from groundzeromedia.org. There's an article for every episode of the week, and when I saw the article, Is It Only a Test, go up, I knew I had to be there for the episode, and I was, and I got to speak to Clyde, and we'll check that out in just a few moments. But we reach our lead single story that we reported for you first, February 7th of this year on Media Monarchy, as well on NewWorldNextWeek.com. Nationwide presidential emergency alerts to be tested on November 9th. That's 11-9-11. And there is a confluence of drills on 11-9-11. We have the piece from KAKE-TV that we'll listen to in just a moment that we posted to youtube.com/Media Monarchy, and we included a lot of other supplemental information, and we also discussed this in pretty great detail on my most recent appearance on Oracle Broadcasting with my man Bob Tuscan of theintelhub.com. The first video of 4 is already posted to my YouTube channel, and hopefully we will get the rest of those up before we go off the grid, and I will do my very best. Shepard Ambellis of theintelhub.com has been following the connections. Drills, drills, and more drills on 11-9, or 11-9. Many data points leading up to and into the dates of November 9th and 10th, 2011, suggesting, speculating that some type of global event control system could be implemented. Even Glenn Beck is commenting on FEMA FCC takeover drill. Is this a doomsday event such as an asteroid pass lurking? Do globalists and the multi-generational serial killers have a worldwide system in place to test? Could the drills go live? We have a community medical exercise as well on November 9th involving the Medical Reserve Corps. We also have MILCOM 2011 running November 7th through the 10th, IEEE Military Communications Conference, including cybersecurity and network and jamming and more. We also have Exercise Pacific Wave, a naval operation happening on 11-9. And you can get PDFs and flyers and rundowns, and there are many links, again, provided from theintelhub.com on Exercise Pacific Wave 11. There are also tsunami drills going on in Greece as we speak. We can tie in UNESCO, we can tie in Paris and the tsunami early warning and mitigation system for the northeastern Atlantic. And there are other first responder exercises. The UK's nuclear emergency exercise has Exercise Night Star 11 on 9. Rather, 11-9. And that's the thing. If you go European and shift the dates, 11-9 is 9-11 anyway. I don't want to be the kind of person that says, oh my God, the sky's falling. But I've been surprised at how many folks are not aware of this drill at all. Folks that I've talked to who I know are very smart folks. I'm going to blast through something a listener sent. And again, a huge thanks to all the folks who send news tips. And I apologize, I can't respond or use them all. But they are all greatly appreciated. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. A listener sent me some of the archives from Dave Emery, for the record, on SpitfireList.com, going back to episodes 399, 400, and more. It's worth noting that the Turner Diaries features the climactic attack on the Pentagon as occurring on November 9th. That date had great significance for the Nazis. The German sailors' rebellion that precipitated the advent of the Weimar Republic, so hated by the Nazis, began on 11-9. Attempting to roll back the Weimar Revolution, the Nazis launched the ill-fated beer hall putsch on that date as well. Kristallnacht, Night of the Glass, Broken Glass, of 1938 was launched on 11-9. Interestingly, the Berlin Wall came down on November 9th. A German or other European, as we just noted, would write that date, November 9th, as 9-11. November 9th, 1993. It's still 3 hours until first light and all systems are go. I'll use the time to write a few pages. My last diary entry. Then it's a one-way trip to the Pentagon for me. The warhead is strapped into the front seat of the old Stearman and rigged to detonate either on impact or when I flip a switch in the back seat. Hopefully I'll be able to manage a low-level airburst directly over the center of the Pentagon. Failing that, I'll at least try to fly as close as I can before I'm shot down. Thus end Earl Turner's diaries as unpretentiously as they began. His final mission was successful, of course, as we are all reminded each year on November 9, our traditional Day of the Martyrs. That all being from the Turner Diaries. Which, off the top of my head, I could see the cover, but I wasn't able to read it and bring it to you exactly, so we'll just go to Wikipedia. Novel written in 1978 by William Luther Pierce, former leader of the white nationalist organization National Alliance, under the pseudonym Andrew McDonald. Turner Diaries depicts a violent revolution in the United States which leads to the overthrow of the federal government, nuclear war, and ultimately to a race war, leading to the extermination of all Jews and non-whites. And it was, of course, derided by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and more, and was a great inspiration to Timothy McVeigh, and of course, nothing is so simple as that, as you should damn well know. But it's there. As I mentioned, a report from KAKE-TV is posted to youtube.com/mediamonarchy.
Not a good question. Early next month, a nationwide emergency alert system test will take place. Now, most television and radio stations will be interrupted for the test, but there are questions about how widespread the test will be and if the test will shut down general communications like phones and computers. Good question.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test. We have all had this message interrupt our TV show or radio programs in the past, and most broadcast companies test the system statewide every month. But on Wednesday afternoon, November 9th, there will be a nationwide test of the EAS. Now, the EAS is mostly used by the National Weather Service along with local and state agencies, but this will be the first national activation of the test. Questions and rumors have been circulating in the past few weeks about exactly what will be interrupted during the test. Will cell phone communication, computers, even power grids be shut down during the test?
While television and radio communications will be interrupted, general communications throughout the U.S. will not be affected. A local EAS test lasts for about 2 minutes. The national test will last 3 minutes, but the length of the test will vary from state to state. The national EAS alert allows the president to inform the country in case of extreme emergencies. Of course, we hope the interruption will only and always be.
And my clip cuts off ominously. Now, even the French agency press is reporting anxiety over upcoming test of U.S. emergency system. Posted yesterday, November 3rd. It's only a test, but nerves are somewhat frayed over the first nationwide exercise of the system designed to alert Americans of national emergencies. According to a message being circulated by school and government officials, there is great concern in local police and emergency management circles about undue public anxiety over this test. It's being conducted jointly by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Federal Communications Commission, and the National Weather Service. So let's hear from FEMA.
Hi, I'm Craig Deviate, the administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, more commonly known as FEMA. And with me is Neil McDevitt. We want to talk to you about something that you've oftentimes heard on your radio, TV, or across cable stations, and that is, this is a test of the emergency alert system. In partnership with the FCC and local and national broadcasters, FEMA is participating in a national test of the emergency alert system on November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. This test will be a little bit different, as this will be a national test across the entire country. And you may not see the familiar test banner crawling across your screens. We want you to know this is a test. And it's our opportunity to check and make sure that our systems are working across the country if we have a national emergency. Because of the system design, not all of you will see the crawl that says this is a test. It will say this is an emergency alert. But we want you to understand this is a test. And so, again, when you see the banner that says this is an emergency alert on November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern, this is only a test. Neil?
Here's the challenge. Some television stations across the country may not have the ability to change the words on the screen. Instead, they will have a voice stating that it is a test. For people who are deaf or hard of hearing, they will not hear this voice. Likewise, people who are blind or have low vision will hear the voice saying it is just a test, but they may not understand what the test is about. People with cognitive or intellectual disabilities may have difficulty understanding how the test applies to them. These limitations come from the older systems that are being used for these tests, and we know they're not as accessible as we'd like them to be. As Administrator Fugate explained, within the next several years, FEMA and the FCC are working to build a modern system that will deliver more accessible and more relevant emergency alerts. Disability community leaders have been actively providing input into this newer system for over a year and will continue to be closely involved throughout this process. We want people to know about the test now so they are not alarmed when the test takes place on November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern. Please share this information with your colleagues, friends, neighbors, and family members. As always, we encourage you to visit ready.gov to find out how you can prepare yourself and your family for emergencies and disasters, and we encourage you to get involved in disability inclusive preparedness activities in your community. Thank you.
Thanks, Neil. Again, November 9th, 2 p.m. Eastern, across the entire country, this is a test of the emergency alert system. I'd like to thank the members of the team, including our broadcasters, for their support in testing this system. And again, as Neil says, if you don't have a plan, this is a good reminder. Go to ready.gov and get your disaster plan now. Thank you.
Now, I, of course, have been using twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, using hashtag EASTest. And been retweeting a lot from emergency management agencies around the country, EAS test. But let's knock it up a notch and take another piece from Shepard Ambellus at theintelhub.com. On the brink of blue beam, war of the worlds style hoax imminent. The fact stands that there are patents and military technologies available to project 3D holograms, including light and sound, onto a background composed of barium and strontium, the very components that make up chemtrails or aerosol sprays typically used in stratospheric geoengineering applications. Yes, geoengineering/chemtrails are a reality. In fact, there is a presidential budget kept basically secret from the civilian population in the United States. And yes, plans for an ET UFO staged invasion on the masses. Project Bluebeam. It's on Wikipedia. And that could be the next trick up the sinister secret government sleeves. Is the stage set for Project Bluebeam to commence? An excerpt from a recent article on Examiner.com reads, an Albuquerque, New Mexico witness reports looking skyward after hearing four jets taking off from nearby Kirtland Air Force Base and then watching a V-shaped object appear in front of and below a plane with five lights under it on October 19th, 2011, according to testimony from MUFON witness reporting database. The IntelHub.com has also received similar reports from various locations in the continental United States and is, of course, requesting additional info, tips at TheIntelHub.com. So as we start to discuss Project Bluebeam, and again, we talk about this on my latest appearance with BobTuskin.com. Project Bluebeam is the idea of a fake alien invasion, but it could also be used as a fake religious event where Jesus or the Mahdi appears in the sky, or Muhammad, or Mickey Mouse, or the Greys, or whatever. And we've gone through many, 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 many times in the past here about those technologies, including, as well, the audio spotlights to beam sound into your head, and holographic projections, and much more. And we relate it to the anniversary of an event that caused mass hysteria. And we'll get a remixed update on that in just a moment. But as long as we've blasted off into space now, and this report on the brink of Bluebeam I have posted to cyberspacewar.com, and we'll get the rest of the cyberspacewar.com updates a little later. But I mentioned Clyde Lewis and GroundZeroMedia.org and the article and episode, Is It Only a Test? Is it only a test?
Just please, if you don't have to have any electronics going on at the time, turn them off. We go down to James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. James Evan Pilato, you're always welcome on this program. Welcome to Ground Zero.
Thanks so much, Clyde. I saw when you posted the article, Is It Only a Test? That I knew I was going to have to kind of call in, and I do have a few related points to kind of add into this picture. So you ask, you know, what can you do in 3 minutes? Or you could do a lot in 3 minutes. Maybe you can do even more in 3.5 minutes. I posted the link in your chat room to a Colorado news source that says the test will probably last 3 minutes and 30 seconds. So I instantly saw the 33. Mm-hmm. So we have tie in more numerology. We also just had the anniversary of the legendary Orson Welles War of the Worlds broadcast. That was the 73rd anniversary, which was Sunday night, October 30th. It happened in 1938,
right.
pre our involvement in World War II, and it kind of played on, of course, the anxieties. And you can look into, you know, the Princeton, you know, psychological operations, you know, research behind all of that. But I'll tie in the third point. I had to write this down to make sure I got it all. You remember what the third Halloween film was?
Yes, it was the Season of the Witch.
Season of the Witch, which it wasn't a very successful film, but there's a toy company in there called Silver Shamrock, and they basically sell a bunch of masks that have a transmitter that when they're all at their TV on Halloween night at 9 p.m., it sends a signal out that blows their heads up.
Mm-hmm.
My other point is, I wonder if this kind of drill, and I wasn't aware of, you were talking about how, you know, the board ops and the people working these stations are going to have to kind of create their own chirons and slates and bugs and crawlers and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There was it was called Operation Dark Winter, and it was run pretty much, you know, the CDC, the medical industrial complex, in June of 2001. And it was a simulation of a biological outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
But they created a series of fake TV and radio news clips so that when they were running this drill, it would seem, of course, more realistic.
Yes.
And you can watch those. I've got those clips on my YouTube channel, and they're out there, Operation Dark Winter. But they actually had some, it was, of course, some actors, but they also had some real, you know, cabinet-level officials playing the roles of themselves talking about this outbreak. So I wonder, and now speculate, I wonder if they've kind of created quote-unquote fake TV and news clips to go along with this.
That's what I wonder, too. Yeah, I wonder that, too, or whether or not they're going to be sending tones out that are different types of tones and not the tones we're used to. And that's a question I have as well.
And that's what makes me think of the, you know, the silver shamrock and the waves, the sound waves.
Do you remember when I did the Panopticon presentation about the digital switchover? And do you
the television switchover?
Yeah, and I talked about how there was, and I had pictures, and I think I could dig them up and post them on my website. There were pictures that were taken at the transmitter up on up there in the West Hills, and I had someone snap the pictures for me. But it showed all of the channels for the television, and they had the default channel. And the default channel, you could barely read it because it was the lighting was so bad because we had to get the camera in there. The default channel was the Pentagon channel, and in case of an emergency, all channels will revert to the default Pentagon channel to get news and information officially from the Pentagon.
Well, and Clyde, you and I both know, and I bet a bunch of your guys can probably add in on this, that most of the radio stations around, even the little non-commercial radio station I worked for in my college back in West Virginia, we had the kind of system where it updated, it basically took it out of your hands. It would override your signal. So in the event of an actual emergency, you don't have to do anything. We're already going to take over your system because we've hardwired it in your rack of gear first.
They're called relay stations. That's what the civil defense used to have, relay stations. And some stations were the high-powered stations, the 50,000-watt clear stations, were the stations that would do the reporting. And that all the stations would have to then be combined into one. And they did it with the digital systems. We had over 80 analog transmitter systems that were reduced down because the analog systems were taken out. So they had less transmitters that they had to deal with and less stations they had to deal with, because some stations folded because they could not switch over to the digital format. From analog to digital.
Mm.
So this is like all well planned. This was 2-3 years ago. We converted over, and then we had the worries about, they could shut down the grid at any time and darken the grid at any time with the switchover. Now they're going to do it.
So I guess I'll find out whether it's for better or worse, but I'm actually going out of town. I'm pretty much going to be off the grid on 11/9, and hell, it maybe looks like that's maybe not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all, especially with that guy that just wrote in from Germany on the GLP saying, by the way, turn your stuff off because there may be tones going through that may not be good for you.
And I don't want to try to imply that. I don't want to try and say, I'm getting the heck out of here. This was planned, and it just turned out that this drill is happening while I'm going to be away from running MediaMonarchy.com, which
always,
kind of bums me out.
Always remember it was you, and you were the one that kind of broke the idea that 9/11 was a drill.
Mm-hmm.
So 9/11 was a drill, and it just so happened that things went wrong on that day. So there you go.
Thanks for letting me share those points, man.
James Evan Pilato, MediaMonarchy.com. It's a news source for Ground Zero. You should go there. It's on the front page of the Ground Zero site, MediaMonarchy.com. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
That was Wednesday night, live on KXL 101.1 FM with my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. And as I was listening to that clip, I was reminded, and there are so many points to tie in with all of this, but ultimately we're going to have to move on here pretty quickly. I forgot to mention that James Corbett of CorbettReport.com has started a daily, hour-long radio show on RBN, on Republic Broadcasting. And we're going to figure out maybe some kind of regular slot to make an appearance, like I do monthly on Bob Tuscan, something similar for Corbett Report Radio, and perhaps something similar with Clyde Lewis. That digression brings us to the update and the remix project. My man Marcus in Salt Lake City, Utah, sent me War of the Worlds, the remix project, and we posted it up on October 30th, the 73rd anniversary of the controversial and infamous broadcast by Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air. He's basically added in a ton of awesome ambient and electronic music from Aphex Twin and Future Sound of London, and also other sound effects, movie samples, station IDs, clips, a mashup, a remix, an update, if you will. I need to make the extra flag at the top because I don't want to try and pass this off as my own, and I created it, and I realized some could make that mistake because we do similar things on MediaMonarchy.com. So I said that on Bob Tuscan's show, and now I'm saying it on this show, and bad on me for not adding that update on the page yet. Marcus, huge thanks for the War of the Worlds remix project. So as long as we're talking about celebrities and influence and presidential emergency alerts, let's grab a piece from November 1st, a little late, but important nonetheless to add to the page from Hollywood Reporter. Obama holds secret meet and greet with Hollywood execs and influencers. Before he left L.A. for San Fran on Tuesday, October 25th, President Obama stopped for an undisclosed meeting with some of the entertainment industry's high-level executives, as well as talent representatives with access to the industry's top stars and musical acts. Among the small group of industry insiders who were invited to attend the early morning meeting with the president at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel were Weinstein Company studio head Harvey Weinstein, CAA managing partner and music head Rob Light, ICM president Chris Silberman, Modern Family creator Steve Levitan, Atlantic Records chairman Craig Coleman, producer-songwriter Bruce Roberts, talent manager and producer Jason Weinberg, UTA music agent Rob Prinz, that's United Talent Agency, talent manager and producer Eric Ortner, Island Def Jam Senior Vice President Karen Quack, Warner Brothers Records President Livia Torrentella, talent manager Greg Mertz, ID Public Relations Publicist Kelly Bush and Mara Buxbaum, talent managers Bruce Floor, Michael Green, Steve Moore, Bill Silva, Universal Music Publishing Group Executive Vice President and Head of Creative Tom Sturgis, and entertainment attorney Chuck Ortner, and actor activist Cal Penn, and you might know him from the Harold and Kumar films, stopped acting to go shill for the Obamasiah. Now, the reactionary right will just line all that up and say, oh yeah, all them liberals, they always all get along, and in a way, yes, it's of course very true. But that's the selective seeing and understanding when you're trapped in the fake left-right political paradigm. They think all this bad stuff happened when Obama came in. They only see it as it contains and pertains to their dichotomy. Hashtag Occupy Oakland. General strike brings labor and schools into the streets, and the Bay Area action is the first U.S. general strike in 65 years in Oakland. On Wednesday, November 2nd, students, labor leaders, teachers, and city workers observed a general strike. The action sent many into the streets, where last week police forcibly removed protesters from an encampment near City Hall.
Welcome back to NewsHour. The Occupy movement is set to attempt its most ambitious tactic yet today, a general strike in the city of Oakland, California, the first in the country since 1946. The protest is expected to shut down some of the city's schools and the fifth largest port in the U.S.
Well, Ken, consider this. One downtown Oakland bank has already announced it will close. Hundreds of teachers will walk out of the classroom, and the Oakland School for the Arts says that it will shut down, citing student safety concerns. That is just some of how this city has been turned upside down for a strike that has yet to begin.
The strike followed violent clashes last week between protesters and police. In a press conference yesterday, some of the organizers explained their decision to strike. At the same time, the mayor of the city, who is facing a recall movement, has instructed local businesses to take precautions. And local police are being told they can't participate.
We were told to do something, we did it, we cleared out the park, and then if you go out there right now, it looks like we did nothing.
Inside the encampment, the police letter was read aloud.
Is it the city's intention to have city employees on both sides of the skirmish line?
But after last Tuesday, the die seems already cast against police.
There's no admission to any wrongdoing, just that they're confused.
Meanwhile, overnight in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 9 people arrested after police demanded protesters vacate the park they had occupied. Occupy Oakland protesters have begun a historic strike in the California city today.
Wake up, I'm talking about Mayor Jean Kwan, who authorized the police violence. We got to let her know that her days are numbered. She's got to be recalled, and we have the power to do it. So let's shut the city down, and those of you and other workers, call on your rank and file, call on your members to come out with the Longshore Union.
Hundreds of people have shown up for the protest at the city's port. The fifth largest in the country has been shut down, and several businesses have shut their doors. The city's mayor, Jean Kwan, says she's hopeful for a peaceful protest. It's the first general strike in the United States in over 65 years. We'll keep you updated on this historic day right here on NewsHour.
Today in Oakland, students, labor leaders, teachers, and city workers observed a general strike. The action sent many into the streets, where last week police forcibly removed protesters from an encampment near City Hall. We turn to reporter Brian Edwards Tiekert, who is in downtown Oakland and has been following the day's events. Brian, tell us where you are right now.
Dorian, I'm at 15th and Broadway in downtown Oakland. Just a week ago, this was the scene of repeated skirmishes between protesters and police when they faced off across metal barricades, and police repeatedly tear-gassed a largely peaceful crowd of demonstrators. The scene could not be more different today. There's 2,000 people marching north on Broadway. They're intending to take some kind of action against a corporate bank branch. They haven't announced what. They've just capped off a festive hour-long rally in the streets. That's the first of several convergences today. There's a giant flash mob that did a dance routine to the song We Will Survive. The lyrics have been rewritten to We Will Survive Capitalism. And now the crowd is marching north on Broadway, probably to a Wells Fargo branch that they will attempt to shutter for the day. They've got a brass band out with them in the street, and just minutes ago, the crowd got an announcement that the Port of Oakland has been shut down by longshore workers, though it's not clear what mechanism in their contract they're using to do that.
And, of course, it went from there. Hashtag Occupy Oakland with our related updates from Kurt Nemo. Anarchist vandals taint Oakland general strike. And whether that's Fed-connected agent provocateurs posing as anarchists or vice versa or neither, we see the powder keg kind of situation that these Occupy situations are. Occupy class war. We also want to tie in a related update from USA Today, just to get it on the record, concerning Scott Olson, former Marines injury spurs vets to join the Occupy movement. And we do have one anonymous comment on this hashtag Occupy Oakland post. When folks are forcibly removed by police for exercising their right to peacefully assemble, it means our rights are no longer protected or valid. People better realize that the police state is here and here now. The Occupy movements must maintain endurance. Otherwise, we all might as well just take a gun to our own heads and pull the trigger. Thanks, Anonymous. Continuing around the world on MediaMonarchy.com, Greece risks meltdown after bailout vote bombshell. This posted Tuesday, November 1st, to MediaMonarchy.com. And, of course, updates come fast and furious, and we do have some of them from the Associated Press and the CBC and Reuters and the Wall Street Journal and YouTube and more. But to put it on the record, from Reuters, the Greek government faced possible collapse on Tuesday, November 2nd, as ruling party lawmakers, that would be Tuesday, November 1st, rather. The Greek government faced possible collapse on Tuesday as ruling party lawmakers demanded Prime Minister George Papandreou resign for throwing the nation's Euro membership into jeopardy with a shock call for a referendum. Caught unawares by his high-risk gamble, the leaders of France and Germany summoned Papandreou to crisis talks in Cannes on Wednesday to push for a quick implementation of Greece's new bailout deal ahead of the summit of the G20 major world economies, which are, again, meeting concurrently as we see this confluence of meetings and conferences and drills and exercises. Greece risking meltdown after bailout vote bombshell.
If the Greek people don't want it, it won't be implemented. So said Prime Minister George Papandreou as he called a referendum on the EU's latest rescue loan for his debt-hit country. But with the price of the package, more harsh state spending cuts, analysts say the latest opinion poll shows most Greeks take a negative view of the deal. The referendum should not be happening now, says this woman in Athens. Now it's too late. What's he trying to tell us with this? I believe it will happen, but it will come tumbling down on his head. Further afield, a German parliamentary leader in Chancellor Merkel's government said he was irritated by news of the public vote and suggested the Greek premier could be trying to wriggle out of the deal. Papandreou, though, grappling with Greece's worst financial crisis in 40 years, maintains a referendum is the highest form of democracy. He'll also ask for a vote of confidence to secure support for the rest of his four-year term.
The Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou has called a referendum on a new EU aid package to ask voters whether they want it or not. A no vote could throw the question of the country's solvency up in the air again, raising more serious questions for the Eurozone. The Prime Minister said a referendum was the highest form of democracy and would allow the people to decide. He also said a vote of no confidence would be held, but ruled out elections. No date was set, but the referendum should take place in the next few weeks. MPs applauded, but Eurozone leaders may be less approving. Last week, they agreed to a second bailout rescue loan of 130 billion euros for Greece, as well as a 50% write-down on its debt. But as protest after protest has shown, many people vociferously oppose more austerity. An opinion poll suggests nearly 60% of Greeks disapprove of the agreements at last week's EU summit.
We have related geopolitical updates. The Eurozone crisis, as it happens, is being updated from Reuters. And let's check it and see if they are still live updating that link. Greek Prime Minister softens bailout referendum push. IMF head Christine Lagarde said that the IMF would not lend to the European Financial Stabilization Fund. Obama says he is confident Europe has the capacity to meet Eurozone debt crisis challenge. And more from Berlusconi and Sarkozy and Merkel and all the other middle manager frontmen for the multi-generational serial killers. But the front people, again, they are the shadows cast upon the wall. We'll mention it again from allgov.com. U.S. halts payments to UNESCO over Palestine vote. Settlement building to ramp up as punishment for UNESCO vote from Haaretz. And again from Haaretz, IDF insists preparedness drills and military exercises are not tied to Iran chatter. So tie in more preparedness drills and military exercises. Hackers take down Palestinian phone and web. That's from thehackernews.com, and I'm not sure how long or how widespread that event was. Our last related geopolitical update posted at Greece risks meltdown after bailout vote bombshell. It's William Engdahl on Russia Today getting into popular uprisings and asking if the Arab Spring is just a cover. We have another anonymous comment at the bottom of this post noting rumors have it that Papandreou has replaced four highly decorated generals with NATO loyalist officers because of the growing danger of a military coup d'etat that is fomenting in Greece. And there is a list of the high-ranking staff members that were quote-unquote replaced, but I will not attempt to butcher those names. But again, they are there in the comments on this post on Greece bombshell November 1st. Bringing us to the November 3rd news purge, this is not a test. The 11-3 news purge, longtime listeners know, so many things going on in the world, there's no way we're going to put up individual posts for all of these things. So everything that doesn't bubble up to be a big enough, fascinating, interestingly connected enough story to deserve its own post, we put it in the news purge, and we blast through the list of headlines. And in this case, as in every other case concerning all the things we do on Media Monarchy and all the other related alternative media, is offer up information that we have found that we want to share with you. we begin with our BioWars and EnviroHealth updates, some of which we made brief note of from FukushimaUpdate.com. New hole in Fukushima Reactor Number 2. Japan government confirms detection of radioactive xenon in Reactor Number 2. Fission being detected at Fukushima. And under pressure from journalists, Japanese MP drinks Fukushima water with his hands visibly shaking. Perhaps like Mr. Burns taking a bite of the three-eyed fish. Anti-nuclear fasting continues in India. Giant new plutonium complex coming soon to Los Alamos. Both of those, again, from James Corbett's new website, FukushimaUpdate.com. And from the news of the strange, man going for newspaper, swallowed by sinkhole. A Long Island, New York man heading out to his lawn for his morning paper mid headlines himself this weekend when he was swallowed up by an 8-foot sinkhole. From Reuters, Dutch psychologist admits he made up research data. And two videos from BrassCheckTV.com that I thought perhaps we would get more into this week, but it just wasn't in the cards, as they say. Overpopulation, the making of a myth, and the implementation of population control programs in China. It was widely reported that the world population was to reach 7 billion on Halloween, trying to scare the populace. And so many of these things, again, go back to the eugenics-obsessed elite and multi-generational serial killers, some of whom have names like Malthus and Galton and Huxley and Wedgwood and DuPont and Rockefeller and, you know. Anthrax attack widow settles $50 million lawsuit. That's from BioPrepWatch.com. And our last BioWars EnviroHealth note, GlaxoSmithKline to pay $3 billion in U.S. settlement on sales and marketing practices, which is a nice way to put it for what they do, which leads in perfectly to our drug war updates. Anonymous confusion in clash with Mexican drug cartel. The initial story was Anonymous, the online gang, were declaring war on the Mexican drug cartels. Anonymous confusion in clash with Mexican drug cartel. It's war, Anons. Far away. No, it's not, Mexicans. Plans by Anonymous to expose members and associates of a Mexican drug cartel have reportedly been abandoned, at least locally, amid doubts whether a member of the hacking collective was ever really kidnapped by the group. Documents show reaction to ATF's wide receiver and Fast and Furious. There it is again, and again we mentioned that on NewWorldNextWeek.com. 76 held over massive U.S.-Mexico drug ring from the French agency press, as well the raw video on YouTube with the link for you. For more on Operation Pipeline Express drug arrests, and as I was opening up the audio, it's nothing to really play other than a bunch of sounds of guys going, "Let's play, charge it up, let's go." Our econo crash updates. Former New Jersey Governor John Corzine's Wall Street firm MF Global, under investigation, to put it lightly, hundreds of millions of dollars in question. That was the early story we grabbed at the end of October from New Jersey media, but we can glance at the breaking news right now and note that Corzine has resigned as the head of MF Global, which you've got to love a name like that. Let you know what they think of you. And as we glance back at the breaking news and don't see John Corzine, we do say from 1 hour ago, MSNBC, UK bomb plot mask becomes Occupy symbol. Guy Fawkes mask, symbol of protest. Occupy protesters embrace V for Vendetta. Is Facebook really going to go down tomorrow? Remember, remember the 5th of November, and remember we played the clip for you. Anonymous claims they will destroy Facebook tomorrow. Tie that in as well. Tie that confusion in to mass communication drills. Like a punch in the Facebook. Bank of America retreats on debit fee, citing uproar, but of course they were still protested by hashtag Occupy Oakland as well, you'll see in here, the People's Republic of Oregon. Fed lowers growth. Take a breath. From Business Week, Fed lowers growth outlook, sees 8.6 unemployment, but far more interesting, and we tweeted this out at Media Monarchy, U.S. jobless claims to have fallen to a five-week low. 5 weeks. Doesn't that kind of coincide with the end of the first week of Occupy? And from just a few hours ago, again from Bloomberg, Anglo-American ends Oppenheimer's De Beers dynasty with $5.1 billion deal. Anglo-American, AAL, if you would like to get involved in the Wall Street racket. Anglo-American agreed to buy the Oppenheimer family's 40% stake in De Beers for $5.1 billion in cash, ending the dynasty's 80-year ownership in the world's largest fake, false scarcity, ridiculous hoax that has bankrupted untold millions of people around the world. We've been lied to about what is valuable and what is garbage. Two quick history mystery notes. I saw this in the New York Times, 11/23/63. That's the new book from Stephen King. Janet Maslin writes the review in the New York Times, A Race Across Time to Stop Assassin and Fall in Love. It is, of course, another massive 900-page tome from Stephen King. And, of course, he believes that Oswald did it all by himself. It's amazing. Oswald was able to rearrange the parade route at the last minute. He was able to make Ripko stand down from the motorcade. He was able to make it slow down. He was able to have all the windows open. Destroyed the notes from Fritz. It was amazing. But the other note on everything being a hoax and a lie from the Columbia Broadcasting System was JFK's iconic Ask Not line, inspired by his chote prep school headmaster. I guess they say talent borrows and genius steals, and we reach our media meme updates with an interesting piece from ArsTechnica.com, and on so many levels, on so many things that we go over on this show. When I reach it as we're going over it on the show, I'm like, oh, damn, we don't have time to go into this, and I'd like to. Burn, media, burn. Why we destroy comics, disco records, and TVs. Getting into, again, the mass hysteria surrounding our moral panics that are pretty much engendered by the corporate-controlled mass media, which lead to mass hysteria when they flip the switch and tell you to freak out. We had to tweet this one at Pump Up the Volume, our music-related Twitter feed. FBI classifies Juggalos as a gang. Most of you may very well know, and again, if you're fans of this show, you are probably media meme savvy. Juggalos are Insane Clown Posse fans. They are now classified as a gang according to the FBI's latest gang threat assessment, with a PDF link for you. Rights activists decry U.S. film deal in China. And from Us Magazine, Zooey Deschanel and husband, Death Cab for Cutie singer, Ben Gibbard, have separated. But that's not the last we'll hear from Zooey. Guar guitarist found dead on the tour bus. That happened just a few hours ago. Tom Keith, Prairie Home Companions sound guy, passes away at the age of 64. Legendary character actor Charles Napier, N-A-P-I-E-R, died at the age of 75 a few weeks ago, and we include it now, one, because I missed it, and two, because some of the films that I've been watching over the weekend, which again, if you check out at Navigate Netflix, you can see the running tally of Watch Instantly and other films on Netflix. You know Charles Napier from the Blues Brothers and from doing most of the military-style voices on The Simpsons. And he was also in a film I watched last night from my year, 1977, called Citizens Band, about CB radio. But our last media meme note from HollywoodMemoir.com, Beryl Davis, British-born big band singer, dies at the age of 87. Beryl, B-E-R-Y-L, Davis, British big band singer, born into a showbiz family. Her father was Harry Davis, and she was a teen actress in the 50s and 60s. And we have a song, and we're going to check it, and it's going to be our just past the top of the hour break on this massive and getting more massive by the moment, November 4th, 2011, episode 238 from MediaMonarchy.com. Let's hear Bluebirds in the Moonlight from 1939 from Beryl Davis. Davis, Bluebirds in the Moonlight. Interestingly enough, Peter Lavenda, in book one of Sinister Forces, which we cite heavily here on Media Monarchy, notes a lot of connections, intelligence and sinister and otherwise, to the term Bluebird. And on the back burner, there is a mixtape concerning and containing that sometime in 2012. We're well into hour number two, my friends, on November 4th, 2011, episode 238 from MediaMonarchy.com. I'm Jim. Let's keep rocking on the 11-3 News Purge. This is not a test. And we continue with Murder and Mayhem, the Baseline Killer, Mark Goudeau. G-O-U-D-E-A-U, guilty on all murder counts, still awaiting massive sentencing for his Phoenix serial killing spree. In Dallas area, four attacks linked by victims' sorority membership. Which, again, that's... The murder and mayhem stories are gruesome, and I hate to sort of demean them by adding them in next to interesting music and bizarre Oregon news, and I don't want to belittle it and desensitize in any of those things, but it's also bizarre. In Dallas area, four attacks linked by victim sorority membership. If that doesn't sound like a bad B slasher film that we all seem to be sucked into, then I don't damn know what is. But the one you probably have heard about, and we'll grab it from ABC News with Diane Sawyer, who for some reason was in Portland here this last week. Something concerning Native Americans and not Occupy Stinky Portland, which we'll get to in a moment. But it's the judge, who is, of course, unremorseful after his video beating of his daughter goes viral.
And now the story of a daughter, her father, who is a family court judge, and the videotape she made of what he calls discipline, she calls abuse. Some of the images in this story are disturbing, as 2020 anchor Chris Cuomo takes us inside the national uproar tonight.
Bend over the bed.
This video can be disturbing to watch. It's over 7 minutes, and it's gone viral the world over. It's a father in Texas whipping his 16-year-old daughter for being on the internet when she was told not to. You don't need to see much of the video to get what it is. A father's idea of discipline, 17 lashes, what he calls spanking. But why the tape surfaced may be more revealing. The girl in the video is Hillary Adams, and she set up the camera.
Another discussion was escalating in severity, and I could tell that a beating was going to take place sooner or later, so I set up the camera and just waited.
This was in 2004. Hillary held the tape for over 7 years. Then, another argument with her father. This time, she tells him about the tape, and she says he basically said, "So what?" Hillary says she released it to confirm what she had believed for so long. This is wrong.
I just wanted somebody to see it and tell me that, no, Hillary, this wasn't right. But I'm glad you were able to grow up and move on past this. And your dad really wasn't right for doing that.
Her dad is William Adams, a family court judge in Texas. Support for Hillary peppered the internet, as did a lopsided debate about the difference between punishment and punishing assault. Reporters reached the father, who defended himself to a local CBS affiliate.
In my mind, I haven't done anything wrong other than discipline my child after she was caught stealing, and I did lose my temper, but I've since apologized. It looks worse than it is.
Texas courts and obviously Judge Adams have condoned spanking at home and in schools in the past. The question is this spanking or assault? Even if there's no criminal prosecution, Judge Adams could still face disciplinary action from the state bar. An investigation is pending.
Chris, what kind of disciplinary action? What's next?
There's a range of effects for an ethical violation. Lawyers can be disbarred, lose their license, never practice again, never be a judge again. There are two tiers here, though. Is there a criminal prosecution and what happens to the judge? And then for the rest of us. For Hillary, the message is out there. To her, it's crystal clear what this video is about. It gives us something to think about. And that matters to her much more than what happens to her father.
And she can read it all online. You can weigh in, too. Thanks so much.
Now, I believe the unfortunate update to that story is that there will be no prosecutions because the statute of limitations is up. Speaking of time being up, our Obamasiah updates. Strong Obama support only among young voters. That's again from ABC News. Chicago Tribune from Obama's gangsterland. Obama advisors fret over pipelines' political risks. Stung by months of protests, Obama's advisors are worried that administration approval for a planned oil pipeline from Canada could cost him political support from Democrats in 2012. And the last sad Obamasiah update note, Hillary Clinton's mother, Dorothy Rodham, passes away at the age of 92. More on that again from HollywoodMemoir.com. And we reach our Oregon oddities. And again, hat tip to my man James Corbett for sending me this story. I had not seen it. Originally posted on whatsupwiththat.com. Portland TV News accidentally calls occupiers stinky people. They put up a graphic. It was only on screen for 1 second. Fortunately, somebody got a TiVo screen grab and posted it up, and it shows KGW, Portland TV station here. It shows the crime statistics related to Occupy Portland. 3 overflowing toilets, 10 not angry people, 450 angry people, and 250 stinky people. KGW told the Willy Week that it was a mistake. Or an accident, you know. The machine had it as a default, you know, in the, before you filled in the words. Stinky people. So basically, people typed this in as a joke initially, and it ran. And again, it's basically people. They're no more trained than I am, and they're running your important news every night at 6:30, and you trust them. But one of our clips concerning Occupy Oakland mentioned some of the arrests in Tulsa, but they did not mention the 27 Occupy Portland protesters arrested in Jamison Square.
This is breaking news.
Breaking news at 6 o'clock. After hours of negotiation and waiting, Portland police do what they said they do and arrest 27 Occupy Portland protesters in the Pearl District.
I spent roughly 4 hours in those zip ties, my hands are tied behind my back.
Now the Occupy camp is regrouping and planning its next move. Welcome to Coin Local 6 at 6. I'm Ken Boddy. It's been just over 12 hours now since those 27 protesters were taken away from Jamison Square in the Pearl District. And reaction from the Occupy camp is strong tonight. Coin Local 6 reporter Casey Montoya is live downtown with the story. Casey?
Well, Ken, 27 arrests related to Occupy Portland in the last 24 hours. And people are wondering, is this group planning a repeat performance? The answer is maybe. Well, take a look. This is the camp downtown Portland. Everything is pretty normal today. There was some construction here in the kitchen area. You probably hear some banging behind me. We did run into one guy, Brad Beach. He's one of the protesters who got arrested last night. Now, take a look at some video. This is from around 1 this morning. That is Brad laying on the ground as the girl in the green next to him gets arrested. Now, they're sitting in Jamison Square in the Pearl District as part of their planned protest. Now, he says he still hasn't slept yet and describes the sit-in and his arrest as peaceful and energetic. He said he was zip-tied by two police officers as he fell limp to the ground, so it didn't look like he was resisting arrest. And when I asked if there will be another sit-in, he said yes.
With just the overwhelming success of last night, that we will probably be doing the same type of sit-ins in other parks across the city.
Now, there does still seem to be a conflict between some protesters and media inside the camp. Listen to this.
We don't want mainstream media pointed. We don't want the f***ing cameras pointed towards our direction. All right? Do that there, there will be f***ing hell.
Now, that was my photographer confronted just about 45 minutes ago right here in the kitchen area. She actually moves his camera, putting her hands on the lens. Now, that is not the case with most people here. Everyone, it has been peaceful to us today, except for that. A couple of other things we're hearing about. Now, you heard last week how Occupy Portland had incorporated. Well, we did hear that the person that filed the corporation papers is kind of trying to undo that now. We're checking on that. We've also been trying to get a hold of Mayor Sam Adams. His rep says he's not going to be speaking up to us tonight because he was up late. And there have been several work groups today here at the camp. They are still trying to come up with that big message that we keep asking them for. We're going to continue to follow this story and stay out here and let you know the latest. Reporting for you live in downtown Portland, Casey Montoya, Coin Local 6.
Thank you, Casey. Now, most of those arrested overnight were cited and released, but with those 27 arrests, the Occupy Portland movement moved to another level. Mayor Adams was there last night as Police Chief Mike Reese oversaw the police action. And here's what they had to say about the city's response to Occupy's latest tactic and what happened overnight in Jamison Square.
Let them go!
At the end of the night, there were folks who wanted to be arrested, so we did that in the nicest possible manner. And the arrests went very uneventful.
The arrests went well into the night. These people and others arrested for disorderly conduct, interfering with a police officer, and refusing to leave the park. And officers waited almost 2 hours after the park curfew at midnight. Portland Mayor Sam Adams was there, expressing support for the protesters, even as police started arresting them.
He gave protesters
numerous opportunities to simply walk away or choose to be arrested.
These two, Benjamin Harris and Benjamin Burson, were arrested for interfering with a police officer and criminal trespass even before the arrest began of those seated in Jamison Square in Portland's affluent Pearl District. Considering the aggressive police actions against Occupy demonstrators in other cities around the country, Portland's mayor called the arrests professional and restrained.
Compared to other Occupy police enforcements, this has got to rank as one of the most peaceful.
But even as police moved ahead with the arrests,
we love you, Maggie!
The mayor says the encampments elsewhere in the heart of the city will be allowed to remain.
I think that the initial strength of the Occupy movement is incredibly necessary right now.
Mayor Adams says the arrests at Jamison came because it's in a residential area with street-level businesses. And that's different from the encampments at Chapman and Lounsdale parks, which are surrounded mainly by government offices. And he says future enforcement will be on a case-by-case basis. Here's a look at the Occupy Portland movement so far. It began on October 6th as a march and demonstration. Mayor Adams gave the protesters permission to camp at Lounsdale and Chapman Squares, where they remain tonight. While mostly peaceful and cooperative, such as during the Portland Marathon 3 weeks ago, arrests have been made from time to time. On October 12th, 8 people were arrested when the city tried to reopen a block of Main Street that the occupiers took over. The largest number of arrests occurred last night. 27 people taken into custody after breaking curfew at Jamison Square Park in Northwest
Portland. That's another clip being cut off. And that's the guy that covered me and Clyde Lewis's 9/11 commission book burning event, again, on Coin Local 6. 4 men arrested at Occupy Portland camps. That's from our own Oregonian, and that concerns sex offenders and violence and the mentally ill and street people that are infesting not only Occupy Portland now, but we see it all around, and we've been talking about it now for several weeks. Manna for the masses as the Ari Emanuel-controlled Michael Moore visits Occupy Portland protesters. Filmmaker Michael Moore was in Portland Monday visiting the Occupy Portland protest before a scheduled book signing and a fundraising event. More on that, again, from the Oregonian. And if this is Oregon Oddities, so we get to our couple of Halloween notes that are both on twitter.com/mediamonarchy. Portland pedestrian stabbed by man dressed as woman, and Portland police arrest zombie after vandalism at Bank of America. Connected, of course, to Occupy Portland. But we do it right and keep it weird. Oregon lawn chair balloonist plans Baghdad flight. More on that from Fox News. And a positive note to end our Oregon oddities. If Oregon police record your traffic stop, it's legal for you to make your own recording. Which sets us right into our brief police state updates. Dismal tales of arrest for the tiniest of crimes in the Empire State, in Gotham, from the New York Times. AllGov.com asking the question, why is the U.S. using X-ray security scanners that Europe rejects as unsafe? You could ask that about our food as well. And there is the clip. We won't play it for you, but hotel guests recruited with Homeland Security TV spots. Again, coming soon to a telescreen near you. Our War Horse updates, Obama plows on with plans to end Iraq and Afghan wars. That is at least ostensibly and for the public, and does not include the thousands of intelligence operatives that will stay behind. Top military officers warn about the effects of potential spending cuts. That's from CNN, and that concerns our Super Congress. And our last War Horse note, U.S. soldier held in Alaska on suspicion of spying. And we end our 11-3 news purge. This is not a test, as we often do with West Virginia worry. I'm born and raised West Virginia, 28 years, and I've been in Oregon for, I believe, it's 6 years tomorrow. DuPont must prove no contamination from West Virginia site. More on that from the Detroit Free Press, thanks to them. Business Week reports West Virginia coal exports deliver strong tax revenue. Another week, another Parkersburg, West Virginia police officer facing a battery charge. More on that from newsandsentinel.com. And finally, West Virginia files lawsuit seeking immediate withdrawal from the Big East. West Virginia University filed a lawsuit Monday seeking an immediate divorce from the Big East so it can become a member of the Big 12 before the 2012 football season. And if you understood any of that, you're probably listening to the wrong show. That does it for everything on the flagship site, MediaMonarchy.com, which means for our remaining 35 minutes, we're going to blast through all the other sister sites in the growing Media Monarchy Kingdom. And as we've noted in so many ways, we just had the Day of the Dead and Samhain and Halloween. So we'll begin Food World Order with the Halloween hit list. I want candy, bubblegum, and taffy. Dentists, buy back Halloween candy to send to the troops. If you don't want your children all whacked out on red number 5 and yellow 40 and caramel color and sodium benzoate, how about those defending our freedom? America!
By now, parents are probably looking for ways to get their children off the Halloween candy sugar high. How about selling the sweets to your dentist? The candy buyback program is underway with treats going overseas to American troops. And Mark Teichner is here with that story. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. You know, dentists call it a win-win-win. The kids get some money, we keep unwanted sugar out of their bodies, and the troops receive a care package from home. Sammy Estep and her brother Oscar turn over their Halloween candy. The 3.5 and 4 3/4-year-olds are taking part in a candy buyback program. Dentists all over the country are paying kids $1 a pound for sweets, which are then sent to U.S. troops serving overseas.
They were excited about it.
Sammy and Oscar's mom, Dr. Susan Estep, works here at the Atlanta Dental Spa in Buckhead.
They want the cash, so they take out their few pieces of their favorite kinds, and the rest they just keep loading up into the bag.
I think that Jack Liner looks a little bit like Mr. Smithers from The Simpsons. All right, speaking of Halloween candy, one local dentist wants to buy it back from your kids. This is Dr. Jarrett Evans. He's here to talk about what he calls Operation Gratitude. But first of all, tell us exactly where you are located.
We're just off the freeway off of I-90 in Liberty Lake, right off the Liberty Lake exit. Can't miss it.
Okay, now, your goal is to give $2,000 back. That's a ton of candy.
That really is a ton of candy. Yeah, that is our goal. So, good to have goals. We were about 1,000 last year, but we've always kind of doubled every time we've done this, and this is our fourth year, so I think it's possible.
Right on. And tell us, where does that money go?
Well, the money goes to the kids, obviously, and so then they can hopefully buy something that won't cause cavities, maybe a Hot Wheels toy or a little Barbie doll or something, but that's up to the kids.
And you said there's actually incentive for parents to bring them into you as well.
Yeah, this year it's not just for the kids, and we have lots going on, lots of activity tables.
I told you we were going to hijack Randy's candy this morning, and indeed we did. Randy's like many parents who may have a little excess. Either the kiddos didn't pick up enough when they came by your house, or more likely, they brought so much home you need something to do with the excess. We have some ideas for you this morning. A candy buyback program. This is Dr. David Austin from New Era Dentistry on the west northwest side of Indianapolis. Waking up early to tell us about this. Candy buyback, what's the idea here and what's the money the kids can make?
Thank you for the invitation.
Sure.
The candy buyback is our way to relieve the children of that excess candy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do believe in moderation, so save those favorite pieces, but all the rest of it, bring it to us today between 4 and 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
All of the candy that we collect goes to support the efforts of Operation Gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Gratitude is a volunteer organization that puts together gift baskets for our service people overseas.
I want candy, bubblegum and taffy. Skip to the sweet shop with my sweetheart Sandy. Got my penny safe, so I'm a sugar daddy. I'm a Hugh Cronin, she my Jessica Candy. I want candy. Put it in a pile. Split it with my bitty, 50-50 down the line. Kinda like close encounters at the cavity kind. I'm talking licorice, kisses, talking chocodile smiles. I want candy. I got a sugar tooth. Put on your shin guard, Sandy, cause I wanna knock boots. Lick the peppermint stick till the lollipop droop. Gum drops it, don't stop till it's lit, not loose. I need candy, bubblegum and taffy. Get my way right, punk, you're gonna get your ass beat. Nasty, do it to your dad, he's embarrassed your whole family. Just cause you came between a kid and his candy, I need candy. Any kind of do, don't care if it's nutritious or FDA approved. It's gonna make me spaz like Bobcats on booze. A hyperactive juice that only I can produce. If you're the giant drill, going straight into hell, releasing ancient demons from their sleep forever spell so they can walk upon the earth and get resituated and hawk that pills and the T-Bands are created. I need candy, want some candy, eat candy till I'm dead. I'll kill you for some candy, give me candy, candy head. Why you keeping all the candy? Who made you candy king? If you don't give me some candy, I will make the lady sick.
MCP Pants, a.k.a. MC Chris, I Want Candy, and that's from pretty much about the only episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force I enjoyed, which concerned using music to trick people into bringing candy to this demon spider from beyond, something like that. But I like the idea of giving away and selling your kids' candy to the military and MCP Pants begging for candy from the beyond. And from the New York Daily News, Dateline South Carolina, 10-year-old draws a pistol to protect his Halloween candy. A woman was just joking about taking his candy, but he pulled out his grandpa's 9mm pistol and said, "No, you're not." And apparently the boys had their grandparents' guns without permission. Our other note from confectionerynews.com, beware of gummy bears found under the influence. Razor blades in your apples and alcoholic gummy bears. Think of the children. And yes, the Candy Wars clip that we did play, if you're keeping score, contained our third Simpsons reference thus far this episode 238. FDA tests pet food amid reports of owner illnesses. From News Corp, the FDA began a nationwide effort to test pet food for salmonella contamination amid evidence it is sickening pet owners. FDA investigators in October started taking samples of dry pet food, pet treats, and diet supplements from distributors, wholesalers, and retailers such as PetSmart, Petco, Walmart, Costco, Sam's Club, and Target. The FDA said in a memorandum released this week it is, quote, particularly concerned about salmonella being transmitted to humans through pet foods, pet treats, and supplements for pets that are intended to be fed to animals in homes where they are likely to be directly handled or ingested by humans, end quote. The testing covers dog and cat food, but also feed for rabbits, reptiles, birds, aquarium fish, and rodents such as hamsters, mice, and guinea pigs. Who's the real guinea pig? Captain Obvious on why loving the McRib isn't a heart smart idea. The Healthland blog from Time Magazine gets into the ephemeral McRib sandwich and its 70 ingredients concerning and containing things that are more likely to be found in gym mats and the soles of shoes. Now, we add a nice animated GIF of Homer Simpson buying the Ribwich, which kind of imitates a Requiem for a Dream-style heroin shot. But interestingly enough, the McRibwich sandwich, it has a Twitter feed, and they're very proud of their 70-plus ingredients. At McRib Sandwich. It's true, I have 70 ingredients. Ingredient number 47, Loch Ness Monster Flipper. The Psychology of Food Aversions from Eatocracy, getting into the possibility that if you ate something that made you feel ill, your brain decided better safe than sorry and conditioned you to feel sick anytime you saw, smelled, or even thought about Clockwork Orange. Survey says food price rise to hit U.S. holiday spending. From Reuters, more than a third of U.S. consumers expect rising food prices to cause them to cut back on holiday spending. A new survey showed Tuesday, November 1st. 28.4% of the 1,000 people surveyed by America's research group said that rising food costs would cause them to cut back on their Christmas shopping somewhat. The question was one in a series posed by Reuters and included in the research group's latest survey, argconsumer.com. A story we discussed on Oracle Broadcasting with BobTuscan.com. California Representative Jackie Speier takes the food stamp challenge. The lawmaker and other faith leaders try living on $4.50 a day, like one in seven Americans do. We also note that Jackie Speier has been a strong voice for bringing to light the epidemic of rape in the military. And now we reach the end of Food World Order and the 11-3 Binge and Purge News Purge Stamps, Pantries, and the Car connection. And it segues quite well. And we post the photo of the Obamasiah on a food coupon, but from the economiccollapseblog.com, $15 trillion in debt, 4 million people on food stamps, and zero solutions on the horizon. Meanwhile, from the Wall Street Journal, U.S. seeks China aid on food safety. Cupboard is bare at Staten Island's food pantry, and the UPI reporting people eat more fast food as income rises. And that reminds me of people say, yes, there should be healthier menus at fast food, should be mandated, but I'm not going to get them. I want to supersize my ribwich. But the last note on Food World Order, Michigan rethinks the food stamp car connection.
If your car is worth $15,000 or more, should you be forbidden from receiving food stamps from the state? Governor Rick Snyder told reporters today that the Michigan Department of Human Services is taking another look at a policy that would enforce that rule. And 24-Hour News 8's Tony Tagliavia is at the live desk right now with what we're learning about this. Tony?
Good evening, Sue. Critics argue that this rule hurts people who are simply trying to hold on to a reliable way to get to school or a job or even...
I went to work when I was 14, and so I've worked for 46 years. I've never not paid a bill until all this started happening.
This is the recession that Carol May says bankrupted her cleaning business on the east side of the state. She says she got rid of everything, sold furniture, lost her house, and now she and her husband are living in their former summer cottage in northeastern Kent County. The couple asked the state for help.
They awarded us $82 a month for food.
But the state started telling people last month that if you have a car worth more than $15,000, you can't get food assistance anymore. Yes. May figures the F-150 that she says is one of the few cars big enough to fit her 6.5-foot-tall husband could violate the rule.
What would we do without a car? If we could go to the corner and catch a bus, we probably would. But without a car, you can't get a job. You couldn't go to the grocery store. You can't do anything.
Today, the governor responded to criticism on the car issue.
That's a valid concern that we should be looking at and addressing, and they're making a review of that topic.
But not everyone thinks the rule is unreasonable. Some responding to stories posted on our WoodTV8 Facebook wall say they were denied help and that people who are getting it don't always need it.
Now, the new rules would also prevent people from getting food help if they have at least $5,000 in bank accounts. Critics want those rules thrown out as well, but this review appears to be focused on the car issue. We'll let you know what happens in Lansing. At the live desk, Tony Tagliavia, 24-Hour News 8.
I was reminded by the way that clip seemed to be crappily cut, and as many of the local news pieces are shoddily put together. I found a typo in the New York Times the other day when I was on my lunch break at work. It was a story that began on a page above the fold about a trial in Haiti. And then as I was continuing through the A section, I reached the continuation and it talked about a trail in Haiti. I was like, what? I thought it was about a court case. And sure enough. But I digress. We now blast off and log on to cyberspacewar.com and begin with a story that I lost in the shuffle of tabs last week in our massive fifth anniversary episode. So here it is from theregister.co.uk. Insulin pump hack delivers fatal dosage over the air. In a hack fitting of a James Bond movie, a security researcher has devised an attack that hijacks nearby insulin pumps so he can surreptitiously deliver fatal doses to diabetic patients who rely on them. The attack on wireless insulin pumps made by medical device giant Medtronic was demonstrated Tuesday at the Hacker Halted conference in Miami. It was delivered by McAfee's Barnaby Jack, the same researcher who last year showed how to take control of two widely used models of ATMs so he could cause them to spit out a steady stream of dollar bills. And in a related update from Business Week, the FDA rejects Medtronic heart device. From threat level, teen murderer undone by World of Warcraft confession when Cruz Wellwood, a 16-year-old in British Columbia, raped and murdered a classmate who jilted him. He attempted to set up a digital alibi by sending an instant message to the missing girl asking why she never showed up to meet him. But the disturbed teen, ironically the son of a convicted murderer who's serving a life sentence for murdering a different 16-year-old girl, left loads of other digital evidence pointing to his crime, including a text message he sent from the site where he and a teen accomplice dumped the body of their victim, Kim Proctor. He later confessed to murdering Proctor in a World of Warcraft chat session. Because he thought it was safer than, you know, MSN chat. Scientists excited about the possibility of life in the outer reaches of the solar system, as my man Alan in Omaha, our main man on Cyberspace War and HolyHexes.com, Jupiter, Moon, Io, and the hot spot in the outer solar system. More on that from the Daily Galaxy, Jupiter's Io, volcanic hot spot of the solar system. And with a reminder from the NASA warns employees and families to be prepared video from earlier this year, we ask, is active region 1339, 1339, is that the big one? Is active region 1339 the big one, the reason government and insiders are stressing emergency preparedness? Universe Today, in their article, Largest Sunspot in Years Now on the Sun, reports AR-1339 came into direct view on November 3rd. The huge sunspot located in the upper left of our picture posted is a bad boy, in the opinion of Solar Dynamics Observatory mission. A solar flare from 1339 peaked at X1.9. X-class flares are massive and can be major events that can trigger planet-wide radio blackouts and long-lasting radiation storms. This region is not facing Earth yet, but we'll be keeping an eye on it as it turns towards an Earth-facing direction, according to the Universe Today article. The real question is where the sunspot will be on November 8th or November 9th. More threats or more wolf crying. YU-55, asteroid YU-55. Is it just another hysterical outburst by alarmists who never rest from crying wolf? And you can read more about the Aesop's fable, The Boy Who Cried Wolf, with a link for you. Bad astronomy dismisses YU-55 and compares it to similar hype of asteroid TU-24 in 2007. Does anyone remember asteroid TU-24? Physicist Michio Kaku, there he is again, always popping up, believes that on Friday the 13th, 2036, Apophis will be our first real threat from a giant asteroid. And again, we wonder about the 11-9-11 FEMA emergency broadcast test. Coincides on the same date with the Exercise Pacific Wave, as reported by the IntelHub.com. A YouTube clip, tsunami forecast for 11-9-11, asteroid, ? Reminds viewers the Earth will, on that same date, pass through the tail of Elenin. Are we reading too much into it? Or is it best to be prepared? The funny thing is, what the hell are you going to do about it? I can make sure my money doesn't go to corporations and killers I don't like. But related to YU-55 and related to 11-9, There's also the question about it hitting the moon, which again would cause major events here on Earth. Think about the tides, at the very least. Richard C. Hoagland gets into more on Revolution Radio and the scenario of YU-55 hitting the moon. But related back to CMEs and solar flares that have already happened and have already hit, October 24th, aurora seen in half of the states. As far south as Arkansas, after a solar flare hits the Earth, these geomagnetic storms included rarely seen red auroras. And that is the quick way we have to, unfortunately, blast through cyberspacewar.com. But again, as we're off the grid next week, keep your eye out on Cyberspace War for updates related to all of these events. As well, holyhexes.com. And we'll begin with the 11.3 Pop Occulture News Purge. Pilgrims, Prophets, and Secret Messages. 2.5 million pilgrims arrive in Mecca for the annual Hajj that begins today. More on that from goddiscussion.com. French satirical weekly firebombed after portraying the Prophet Muhammad. Ireland closes embassies in Vatican City, Empire of the City, and Iran as a cost-saving measure. Scientology leader David Miscavige fed gourmet meals every few hours. Detroit official who owns church charged by feds. Stolen Phoenix Jesus statue returned. And finally, on Halloween, or rather 2 days before, William Peter Blatty, the author of The Exorcist, on its quote-unquote secret message. And we did post several things related to Day of the Dead and Samhain and Halloween on holyhexes.com. Something Wicked This Way Comes, links to a BBC 4 presentation of the Ray Bradbury novel from 1962, Something Wicked This Way Comes. And then we ask the question from the Sun Sentinel, are horror films anti-religious? And it links to a great piece from the Canton Repository in Ohio concerning religion and film and the supernatural and, as we note, sinister forces. Day of the Dead, a time of remembrance for the living. Fantastic, terrifying creatures arise in the heart of Mexico. That's the Washington Post. And from MSNBC, while the name and many of the icons symbolic with the holiday may evoke macabre imagery, the Day of the Dead, November 1st, is a time for gatherings in remembrance of ancestors and others who have died and to make offerings, ofrendas, to the deceased, and the celebrations often take a lighthearted form with parades, parties, and humorous storytelling. We also have a piece from Dr. Terry Watkins getting into the Druidic origins and the role of the Catholic Church in Halloween. And there's also dissenting views and other related clips on the heretical history of Halloween or the haunted history of Halloween. And so many of those things we embedded secretly within our mixtape 13, That Most Harmonious Ghost. Catholics' mass liturgy changing, ritual whiplash ahead. From the Washington Post, English-speaking Catholics. I'm trying to be an English-speaking agnostic. English-speaking Catholics are bracing for the biggest changes to their mass since the 60s, a shift some leaders warn could cause ritual whiplash. The overhaul, which will become mandatory on November 27th, is aimed at unifying the more than 1 billion Catholics worldwide with a translation that is as close as possible to the original Latin version. It allows for less independence and diversity of interpretation in a church that in recent decades has tried to retain more control over how Catholicism is defined. And a fascinating piece getting into the enigmatic essay King Kill 33, written by James Shelby Downard, getting into the machinations of Freemasonry and the symbolism and mysticism surrounding the events of the assassination of JFK. Like on so many other levels, I wish we could get more into it. But again, my friends, perhaps these podcasts are just the appetite whetting. And that's what I hope, is that you hear some bit in here, or you hear three things that we've connected together, and you want to go set off and go down the rabbit hole, take the red pill, whatever hackneyed phrase you want. We're using this raw information to learn our way forward, but you have to come back and share it, and that's my little meager thing that I'm trying to do here. And we reach the end as the House of Representatives, just after Halloween, have affirmed the motto, "In God We Trust."
I know that down through the ages there has been this great question that has occurred to mankind, and it is a similar one. Is God God or is man God? In God do we trust or in man do we trust? I would submit to you that the answer to that question, Mr. Chairman, is one of profound significance. Indeed, Christopher Columbus trusted in God, and his service to God was to go out and search the world for find ways to do things that would honor God, and he ran into this place called America. Indeed, those who were colonists that first came to America came here because they wanted to worship God. They wanted to find a way to honor God. Indeed, the founding fathers that started this country did so in the name of God. So their trust in God has had a profound impact on those of us that live in this day. And I would submit to you that if we answer the question the other way, Mr. Chairman, if man is God, then an atheist state is as brutal as the thesis that it rests upon, and there's no longer any reason for us to gather here in this place. We should just let anarchy prevail, because after all, we are just worm food. So indeed, we have the time to reaffirm that God is God, and God do we trust. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And if Congress tells you they don't have time, they've got time to do it. We've been in the House of Representatives. What have you guys been debating? John, you've been debating a commemorative coin for baseball. You had legislation reaffirming that "In God We Trust" is our motto. That's not putting people back to work. I trust in God, but God wants to see us help ourselves by putting people back to work. There's work to be done. The workers ready to do it. The American people are behind this. Democrats, Republicans, Independents believe in this. These are ideas that have been supported by all those groups in the past. There's no reason not to do it this time. I want you to make sure your voice is heard in the halls of Congress. I want us to put people back to work, get this economy growing again, and remind the entire world just why it is that America is the greatest country on earth. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
And yes, of course, even a broken clock is right two times a day. That's everything from Holy Hexes. That's everything from Cyberspace War, everything from Food World Order, and everything from MediaMonarchy.com, my friends, as we reach the end of episode 238 for November 4th, 2011. As we have been doing for the last several months, we've been imploring you excitedly to come join us over on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, where you will see at the top of the page our hashtag and at links to our main subject headings, like New World Next Week, Food World Order, Cyberspace War, Holy Hexes, Mixtapes, and also at Navigate Netflix and at Pump Up the Volume. But I've added a lot of extra things on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. And again, as we're off the grid next week, if we're able to catch any Wi-Fi waves, we will do our best to try and... I don't know if we're going to inform you of anything at that point. It may be you informing me of what's going on. But I've also added in automatic feeds that post to Twitter when I'm sleeping. We're getting updates from the Cult News Network. And also, and I don't think I told him, hey, James, I added your everything feed from CorbettReport.com into my Media Monarchy Twitter feed. So everything that comes from Corbett Report, you will get a link to on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. All that and so very much more there. And we want to glance over at Pump Up the Volume, which, of course, the 1990 Christian Slater film is a huge favorite and influence on me. And we've got Song of the Day podcasts that come. You get two songs every day. It's a little cheater's move that I use to somehow try and stay hip to the kids' music, since I'm long since away from my college radio days. But you can also see tweets from The Illuminati, who note that hashtag 2011 music taught me that you don't need to be talented anymore to make millions. Just join us, and we will take care of the rest. Just more of the fascinating occult trappings that have blown wide open in pop culture, and especially hip-hop pop culture. as chronicled quite well by VigilantCitizen.com. But we also have Twitter.com/NavigateNetflix. Thanks to TragedyAndHope.com for navigating Netflix. And I tweeted out last night, it was a movie marathon as we were prepping this episode 238 for you. We watched a film called Dead Air, directed by Corbin Burnson, who you may know from L.A. Law and Psych and tons of other things. But it's about a shock jock talking to his caller still struggling to stay alive amid a bioterror attack. And as I was watching it, I think at some point I even said aloud to myself, I was like, this is pretty much a truther film. As they're talking about, well, this virus was made in Quantico, Virginia, and Israel drops white phosphorus bombs, and you guys fund Osama bin Laden and all of that. So it was a radio-related horror film, as again, I love all kinds of radio-related films, and Netflix, and being able to navigate Netflix has helped me find out and see some of that I've always wanted to see or had never heard of. Like Pontypool, P-O-N-T-Y-P-O-O-L, directed by Bruce MacDonald, out of Canada. And that is on Instant Watch on Netflix. Valentine's Day is anything but ordinary for a radio shock jock as a virus infects a small Ontario town. Does that sound like Dead Air as well? And the radio-related hat trick wrapped up with 1977 film from Jonathan Demme called Handle With Care, a.k.a. Citizens Band, which I like better as the title, set in a small Nebraska town and based on the CB, Citizens Band, radio craze. So again, my friends, that's it. That's it for episode 238, November 4th, 2011. We are going to be off the grid next week. And let's play it one more time.
On November 9th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, your regularly scheduled programming on this and all other networks will be interrupted with a short, nationwide test of the emergency alert system. This will only be a test.
As I said, no New World next week, no live episode next week. We're going to be off the grid, and we will do our best to do some on-the-ground reporting where we are. But as we said, Alan in Omaha will be manning Holy Hexes in Cyberspace War and keeping things up to date on interspace and outer space and pop culture and so very much more in the world of alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, my friends. I love doing this for you, and we will be back in 2 weeks with episode 239 from MediaMonarchy.com again. As always, we're on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and a huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and RevereRadio.net. We're going to wrap up this episode with more music, as we have been doing more and more, putting more media into the monarchy of jam-packed episodes. And we ended episode 237 with music from Queen, and we started this episode with music from Queen. And in our media meme updates, we noted, unfortunately, that Zooey Deschanel and Ben Gibbard had split up. Zooey Deschanel and Matt Ward, who I've met at my store, as I've also met members of Death Cab and Slater Kinney, which is kind of awesome thing about Portland, Oregon. Zooey Deschanel is in a sometime band with Matt Ward, also known as M. Ward, and they are called She and Him, and we're going to go out with their song from their debut album, Volume 1, and it's called This Is Not a Test. Episode 238, November 4th, 2011, MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster, reminding you, as always, my friends, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care. The friends you've made.
this is not a test, 'cause you can have it if you want it anyway. For those of us who try
calling CQ New York. Is there anyone on the air? Is there anyone on the air? Is there anyone?
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, braradio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.